could now be diverted to funding education at home.
If we could go back in time and take the money we poured into that intervention and instead say, you know what, how about making education of our young people one of the highest priorities? You could fund college for every B average kid coming out of high school. You could fund college for 50 to 100 years.
Gill also says he would like to increase funding for Pell Grants for college students rather than relying so much on student loans. One way he would do that is by raising taxes on the wealthiest Americans.
When you say, all right, we will tax millionaires and billionaires, we will have corporations begin to pay taxes again in this country, then you have the money to put into Pell Grants rather than going the opposite way.
Republican Rodney Davis of Taylorville says there is a role for the federal government in supporting schools, but he wants control to remain at the local level.
I think if you look overall at the federal role in our primary and secondary education system, it's tantamount to not enough money, too many regulations.
For many people who are unemployed, a next option is going back to school. But Davis says that's not always easy to do for everyone. He says people risk losing their unemployment benefits when they get into a workers training program or a college or university. If elected, he would push to change that.
Let's imagine if we allowed those who are unemployed looking for a new career to go back to school, go through that training program, maybe at their own dime. Let's allow them the opportunity to do that while still remaining on unemployment so that they can raise their families.
The third contender in the race is independent candidate John Hartman of Edwardsville, who is the only candidate with experience teaching in a classroom. He worked in public schools in Missouri for several years. Hartman says he doesn't have a problem with the way schools are currently funded.
If we're going to have fiscal discipline on the federal level, it's going to apply to every across the board. You know, if we don't have the money to match our revenues, we need to both raise revenues and cut spending, and that applies to all areas of spending, including education, until we can get back in balance.
Hartman believes the federal government needs to have a limited role in operating schools since it provides the smallest amount of education funding. When it comes to assessing classroom performance, he thinks standardized testing shouldn't be the only measurement of a student's progress.
You know, you can't teach unless you are continually assessing and adjusting the learning activity for the student based on what they know. And I feel that I was able to do that fairly well. A lot of my assignment was to challenge the high-achieving students in math and science. And I gave it to them, and they responded.
The winner of the 13th congressional race may vote on reauthorizing No Child Left Behind, which seeks to raise reading and math scores for all students by 2014. The nation is far behind on reaching that goal, and Hartman and Gill worry No Child Left Behind leads to a heavy emphasis on teaching to the test. All three candidates support revising the law. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
Tomorrow we'll hear about the candidates' stances and the role of government. To learn more about the candidates running in Illinois' 13th congressional race, visit our Decision 2012 page at will.illinois.edu/election. And don't miss the final 13th congressional debate, broadcast live from WILL tomorrow night at 7 here on AM 580 and WILL-TV. After months and months of requests from Illinois public radio station WBEZ and other media outlets, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn is finally allowing reporters into prisons. The governor's actions come only after the threat of a federal lawsuit from WBEZ, and Quinn's administration continues to throw up roadblocks to meaningful transparency. Robert Wildeboer reports on recent legal efforts and the state's new media policy.
7 months ago, when I read some concerning reports by the John Howard Association about Illinois' prison system, I had no idea I'd be spending much of the year simply trying to get into the prisons to report on conditions firsthand. If you're a regular listener to this station, then you may have heard some of the stories we've aired about inmates living in crowded basements that habitually flood, infestations so severe an inmate had to get a cockroach surgically removed from his ear, and a broken jaw going untreated for 8 weeks while the inmate withered away because it was too painful to eat. We thought the public should see and know firsthand exactly what's going on, but Governor Quinn has consistently refused requests for access.
Yeah, well, I don't believe in that. I think that it's important that when it comes to our security of our prisons, I go with the director that I have in the Department of Corrections. Security comes first, and it isn't a country club.
Public officials and citizens called on the governor to let reporters into prisons, but Quinn was unresponsive. So over the past several weeks, WBEZ has been working with attorneys Jeffrey Coleman and Jason Bradford from the law firm of Jenner & Block. They volunteered their time to represent WBEZ to push for access. Here's Jeff Coleman.
I've spent a lot of time in prisons, and I believe it's extraordinarily important for the public, the taxpayers, to understand what the conditions are in our state prisons, in our federal prisons, at places like Guantanamo. And I think it's wrong for government to deny the media and, through the media, the public, the ability to see and hear what things are like in the prisons and what the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money are being used to do.
Coleman and Bradford met with attorneys for Governor Quinn and the general counsel for the Department of Corrections. They laid out our concerns and legal arguments.
We believe that we have valid constitutional claims to be brought, and we did indeed threaten to sue the Illinois Department of Corrections because it was denying media representatives access to the Illinois prisons.
Last Friday, the Department of Corrections released a new media policy, though it's disappointingly similar to the old media policy. Basically, it leaves everything to the discretion of the director of the Department of Corrections. But here's the new part. Instead of blocking media visits altogether, the department is now planning to hold a few media tours, including visits to Vianna and Vandalia, prisons WBEZ had earlier been told we couldn't visit because of blanket concerns about safety and security. But the new policy does not allow reporters to take microphones or cameras on the tours, and that is a significant impediment for reporters trying to inform the public about what's going on inside. It means if there's mold or flooding, the public won't be able to see how severe it is or isn't. The public won't know what Building 19 at Vianna looks like when all the windows are boarded up like it's an abandoned building, even though it still houses hundreds of inmates. It means the public can't see firsthand what it looks like when the ceiling on an entire cell block collapses, requiring 88 men to be moved to a gym where they're forced to share only two toilets. I asked the Department of Corrections to explain the prohibition on mics and cameras, but they didn't. In an emailed statement, a spokeswoman noted that media will be permitted to bring a notebook and the department will provide so-called flex pens on tours, and that's above and beyond what is permitted on any other tour.
Transparency should be a default position of any government.
John Mackey is with the John Howard Association, a nonpartisan prison watchdog group in Illinois.
So if the Department of Corrections is saying, you know, we will not allow X, whether it's a microphone or whatever, they should be able to explain. They should be able to say, this is why. And if they can't, I think that's a problem.
I've been on the ground in Illinois prisons for a few decades, and increasingly it has tightened up.
Carol Marine is a reporter with NBC5 and WTTW in Chicago, and a columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. She's reported from dozens of prisons.
We had a cameraman colleague who used to joke that I would never take him any nice places. I was always going into prisons. We've been in just about every prison in the state of Illinois, including Menard, which is to hell and gone on the other side of the state.
At her desk at NBC, Marine shows me video footage from stories she's done in prisons. In one from the late 1970s, she chats with six or eight, maybe more, inmates about the importance of gang ties behind bars.
Or they don't have somebody to protect them.
I have had situations where I have gotten into fights, not here in this institution, but in the county jail.
Marine says historically, reporters have been able to take their equipment all over prisons. She shows me another story from 2005, where she interviews an inmate on the cell block and others in a workshop where inmates are welding.
Now, you know, the things I'm learning, hopefully, I can apply.
He's 37 now and learning in prison to become a welder.
It matters to bring in the equipment. I'm going to tell you, you know, you can't report on prisons if you can't see them, if you can't talk to inmates, and if you can't bring in a camera. And what the administration, I think, is counting on is that in a day of reduced news budgets, fewer reporters, and the distance that prisons are from Chicago, that we won't care or we won't cover it. And as a consequence, taxpayers won't see it.
Marine says she thinks the Department of Corrections also figures that news organizations are suffering from shrinking budgets and are therefore unlikely to sue for access.
We are less likely to insist that it is our right and our responsibility to cover public institutions into which millions, if not billions, of taxpayer dollars go.
The threat of a lawsuit did push the Illinois Department of Corrections to allow reporters in for guided tours. But the new media policy is a long way from maximizing transparency. Instead, it seems aimed solely at minimizing the threat of a lawsuit. For months, we've been requesting an interview with Governor Quinn to discuss the policy decisions being made by the Corrections Department under him, but his press office has declined. Once again, WBEZ's attorney Jeff Coleman.
Opening the Illinois prisons to media review for the first time in several years is a very positive development. But we continue to believe that the Department of Corrections policies and practices, including this new directive, violate constitutional guarantees and deprive the public of the meaningful ability to see and hear about conditions in the prisons and what taxpayer monies are being funded to do.
Three media tours at state prisons are tentatively scheduled, one a month for each of the next 3 months. I'm Robert Wildeboer.
WILL programming is made possible by the Center for Advanced Study. The MillerCom 2013 lecture, Scientist Responsibility to Society, originally scheduled for this Thursday, has been canceled due to the weather. It will be rescheduled. More information is available at the Center for Advanced Study website.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 31st of October, 2012, All Hallows Eve, Halloween, based on the Celtic holiday when the Celts believed that the world of the living and the world of the dead combined, and the dead were free to walk among us. It was on this day, 1517, Martin Luther posted his 95 Theses on a church door in Wittenberg, Germany. Martin Luther, a monk who disagreed with the church's practice of selling indulgences for the forgiveness of sins. Luther believed that God offered forgiveness freely without having to pay for it. So he wanted to reform the church and posted the theses as points to be argued in a debate. Had no intention of creating a new branch of the church, but that is more or less what he did do, set in motion a huge rift within the church which led to the Reformation. It's the birthday of John Keats, London, 1795, who lived a short life marked by the deaths of friends and family members. His father died when he was 9, a year later his grandfather. When he was 15, his mother died of tuberculosis, the disease that eventually killed his brother and later Keats himself. Began his career as an apothecary, a druggist in London, and then began writing poetry.